Welcome back to Writer's Block. This is going to be the final episode of this series here. I've been thinking about how I wanted to wrap this up, and I think this time I want to try something a little different. I've spent some time thinking about how I want to wrap up this series, and I've decided to share a story from my own life. From about 3 years back, when my brother Max and I took a road trip up to Chicago to see the Sioux at the Chicago Field Museum, we'd been looking forward to the trip all summer and were raring to go once the time came around in around mid-August. So it was the night before we left. We'd packed the car, called ahead to the first hotel in Texarkana on the border between you'll never guess which two states, and climbed into the bed, dreaming about the long miles of empty road ahead of us, letting those peaceful thoughts lull us to sleep. Have you ever had a recurring dream? It's a bit of a non sequitur, I know, but something that comes back night after night, month after month, maybe slightly different from the last time, but more or less the same. I used to get those when I was a little kid, and I still do sometimes when I get really worked up over something. For me, it's always the zombie apocalypse, all my friends and family turning into cold, unfeeling killing machines. My mom and I used to call them stress dreams. She got them too, and when she had a big filing deadline coming up at work or something equally mission critical, the dreams would usually follow along with the premise of whatever was getting to her. But she had one in particular, ever since her own college years, that was the same every single night without fail, down to the detail. It went a little something like this. When she was nearing the end of her college career at Northwestern, she took this senior seminar class on ancient Native American archaeology and anthropology. It was a tiny class, no more than 10 or 15 people, a fact the professor saw as a great opportunity to get a little more on the bleeding edge. So he took the class to the recently unearthed Cahokia burial mound site outside St. Louis, Missouri. She always said the trip was fine, that nothing had seemed particularly amiss, but that she had felt kind of uneasy at the site, like she wasn't supposed to be there or something. The land was fertile, with small critters and big alike all over the place. They even saw a family of deer standing there atop one of the mounds, watching them, like the strangers they were in that ancient place. It didn't help that on their way out, the battery in their car died, and they had to wait several hours for a tow to the nearest auto shop. Of course, the mounds were super out of the way back then. I know it seems a little convenient for a place like that to be all haunted and stuff, but keep in mind that this was way back in the 70s. Who could possibly imagine how unreliable school buses must have been back then? Anyway, they made it back to school okay, but that night was when the nightmare started for her. My mom would tell me this story the morning after she'd had this nightmare without fail, every single time, so I heard it probably 50 times while I was growing up. And I'd sit there and nod and smile, waiting for this part exactly. So here goes. She'd drop in, looking at herself in some kind of third person over the shoulder view. She, the professor, and her classmates would be walking through the park, over and around the dozens of massive mounds that comprised the Cahokia site. Every so often, she'd look around and notice that she was more and more alone. Suddenly, she'd notice that the professor was no longer walking in front of her, leading the way, and that she'd somehow found herself atop the tallest mound in the site, looking over the fields of grass rolling off to the tree line in every direction. She'd pause to look at me here, panic lingering in her eyes, and she'd explain those final moments that jarred her back into the waking world. She'd be standing there, looking out over the burial sites of all those who had come before, when suddenly she'd feel something coil around her ankles. She'd look down to find bony hands wrapped around each of her ankles, dragging her down. And as she'd sink beneath the loamy soil of the hills, grass and dirt flooding into her open, screaming mouth, her eyes would snap open, and she'd return to our world, the world of the living. She'd always write those dreams off as stress dreams, just like any other. She always insisted that they only started because she'd had final exams the following week after that trip, and she really needed to do well. It's a plausible story, it is, but that same dream haunted my mom for nearly four decades. Max and I knew there was more to it than just stressing over some test. She woke up that morning we were going to leave in a panic, fresh from that same dream. My mom's always been a worrier, as she puts it, so I totally get it. Max and I reassured her that we'd drive safe, that we'd eat healthy, and that we wouldn't stay anywhere too isolated and shadowy. Nobody read it as an omen. Why would we? A dream's a dream. We hit the road early that morning and drove for what felt like eons, Texas is a big place. That much is no joke. And to get to the border from Houston takes the better part of a day, even if you're going a solid 20 miles per hour over the speed limit the whole way. And let's not kid ourselves. In Texas, well, we all are. We got to the border with Arkansas by nightfall, had a nice dinner, and checked into a local hotel. Nothing too eventful. The next morning, though, as we were checking out, we got mobbed by a flock of grackles. My brother's got a Subaru Outback, one of those cars with the built-on bike rack things up top. There must have been 30 of those little black birds squatting up there, screeching at us as we walked up to the car. They wouldn't leave when we shooed them either, not until we peeled off and hit the highway, and that with plenty of squawking. They went so far as to follow us for a couple miles, their screeches a desperate cry of warning, fading into the distance. The trip was full of moments like that, things that didn't feel quite right, but maybe only because we were city slickers striking it into new territory. It was a lot of fun. On the second day, we visited the world's 7th largest pyramid, which, you'll never guess, is actually a Bass Pro Shop in Memphis, Tennessee. Seemed crazy to me, too. We were eating some barbecue in this little hole-in-the-wall place with a massive framed picture of a pig gorging itself on watermelon, and I said it really bore a striking resemblance to Max when I looked at it. He didn't like that too much. Surprise, surprise. We were looking at the map, and I noticed that we were only about 3 hours away from St. Louis. Max said he wanted to cover as much ground as we could, so I grabbed the rest of my sandwich and climbed behind the wheel. Max clambered into the passenger seat, sauce dripping onto his jeans, curses dripping from his mouth, and away we went. The miles rolled by, like an all-too-forgettable visit to the landscape section of some art museum. I kind of dozed off, letting the road lead the way, when I noticed the sun was going down. There was a sign coming up that I couldn't quite make out, so I prodded Max out of his sour-patched-induced stupor and asked him to peep it as we sped past. "Something about mountains," he stumbled, and it hit me. I couldn't believe it, but there was really only one place we could be. It had to be Cahokia. By random chance, we hadn't planned on this. We were at the state park within the hour. There's no entrance there, not really. You just kind of keep driving, and suddenly you're surrounded on all sides by these towering dirt mounds that stretch off to the horizon in all directions. And you're wondering what happened and where you're supposed to go exactly. The sun was nearly fully down now. The sky painted a gorgeous fiery pink and orange as Max and I drove around looking for the visitor center. After about 30 minutes, we managed to find it. I patted my pocket, the classic phone keys wallet checkup, and hopped out of the car, making a beeline for the front door. Max trailed a few steps behind, swatting mindlessly at bugs and glancing around nervously. We were the only car in the lot, alone amongst the mounds that marked the graves of thousands of dead, centuries old, their names long since forgotten. I tried the door to the center, but it was locked. They weren't open on Mondays, apparently, and besides, it was pretty late. But there was no way we were coming back here, and I knew we had to do something, to have a story for Mom at least, when we got home. So we switched on our flashlights and made our way up the tallest mound, a light fog settling around our feet. It took a few minutes to get to the top, but when we did, well, it was worth it. I really love stargazing, and the stars that night, well, there's something special. Max even saw a shooting star, he says. But as he was lying there, eyes closed, mid-wish, I saw something dart through the trees, far at the base of the mound. I wasn't sure what it was. Bobcat, maybe? Maybe even a bear. I don't know if they have bears that far south, but you never know. Whatever it was definitely watching us, and it wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. Max turned to me after a while, asked if we should go. I glanced at the woods, felt that unknown presence staring back at us, and felt a shudder run down my spine. I nodded, and we raced back down the mound towards the waiting car. The fog seemed to get thicker and thicker as we went until I could barely see Max's corporeal form stumbling through the mist behind me. I called out, waited for his reply to float through the heavy night air, and pressed on. Finally, I made it to the base of the mound. I waved for Max to hurry up, heard his footsteps thudding ever closer, and jogged off to get the car started. Whatever that thing in the woods was, it was creeping closer and closer. I could hear it, crunching towards us, biding its time. My hand curled around the car door and I wrenched it open, slid into the driver's seat, and switched the headlights on as fast as I possibly could. The light flooded out over the mound, wrapping around Max as he stumbled forwards, and casting their light on. Just a family of deer standing there, watching us. maybe 8 of them in total, a few big ones and several smaller guys that I could only assume were their kids. They stood there, waiting for us to leave, unfaltering as they watched us with steely gazes I never once thought that deer could muster. Max clawed his door open, fell into the passenger seat. I flipped the trusty old Subaru into reverse and we sped out of that cursed parking lot, that family of deer advancing ever so surely on us as we went. But something didn't feel right. The world was still just holding its breath. I could feel it. I knew there was something more we were meant to do there. So I put the car in drive and we sped off, back towards the visitor's center. When we got there, it was pitch dark, the fog blanketing the sky. I crawled out of the car, scanned the area for something, anything that might jump out of the dark and drag me away. Max wouldn't even get out of the car. He'd rather his brother get dragged off by some ancient curse, I guess, but more power to him. Anyway, I grabbed a pen and a scrap of paper from the center console and sprinted off towards the visitor center, patting my pockets once again just to make sure. We were at the Cahokia burial mounds, after all. When would any of our family ever be back here? And right after Mom's nightmares had flared back up again. Well, I pulled that scrap of paper and pen out of my back pocket and scrawled a hasty thank you note on the front. Donation enclosed. Grabbed my wallet, pulled out a 20, the bill I had on me, only one, and folded it into the paper. And then, like the devil himself was breathing down my neck, I shoved that note under the door with all the haste I could muster and sprinted back to the car. Max and I peeled out of there faster than we'd ever sped anywhere in our lives, and keep in mind, we are from Texas. It'd been a few years since then, and a stressful few at that. I know my zombie nightmares have definitely reared their ugly, disfigured heads these last few months with some regularity. I'm sure the same is true for a lot of you out there. But one thing I can say for sure, whatever was lurking over my mom's shoulder those past 4 decades, whatever was giving her those nightmares in the wee hours of the night, it's gone now. I'm not sure if that makes Max and I exorcists or just lucky, but I guess even 1,000-year-old ghosts appreciate being kicked a few bucks every now and then. So there you have it. Thanks for tuning into this final episode of Writer's Block. It's been a terrific experience for me writing this show, and I hope it's been just as grand a time for all you listening. We're launching a new series in a few weeks here dealing with some truly stranger-than-fiction conspiracy theory-styled stories. It'll be a real blast, and I hope to see you all over there, doing it with my roommate Ben, who's in the recording studio with me now. Till then, this has been Bob with Writer's Block. I'm signing off.